You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Osimo.
Cozze cittadine, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze cittadine, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Lionel.
Good evening. We're in bustling Osimo.
I didn't even ask you then. You're so well programmed that you just say it without even being asked.
Yeah, I don't need to be asked anything now.
Osimo, twinned with where in Argentina?
Well, I know this. Do you want me to spoil it or do you want to...
No, you do it.
Okay, it's twinned with Lance Armstrong in Argentina.
The controversial Lance Armstrong, whatever became of him?
Yeah.
No, one of the Giro's top podcasters in the early stages of the race.
Yeah,
well, still probably one of the Giro's top podcasters.
Also
on site.
Also made his Grand Tour comeback at the Giro, didn't he? For quite a lot of money, I think.
Yeah.
After his first retirement, finished in around about 23rd place or something like that. Corrections corner material this tomorrow because I haven't actually looked this up. But then, of course, went on and finished. On the podium at the Tour de France, didn't he, that summer, 2009?
Correct.
Heady days, heady
also
days.
Also curious, Lionel, to see that the team parking today, so where the team buses were parked after the finish, was on the Via Marco Pantani.
It was indeed.
I don't know the story. I will endeavour to find out why that road is named after Marco Pantani. There was no obvious connection that I could identify with the town of Osimo. We're a fair way from, I mean, same part of Italy, but we're a fair way from Pantani's hometown of Cesenatico. So, that was curious.
We're in the Marche now, aren't we? We're moving up through the regions very quickly. We started this morning in Umbria, and, we had quite a dramatic morning, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, I'd almost forgotten. We were raided by the police.
Well, we weren't raided by the police.
The hotel was raided by the police. I came down to breakfast, Lionel was looking... even more tense than usual.
Yeah, I was really tense.
And he sort of started motioning towards a table in the corner, and there were about four or five people sat around the table, two of whom we'd met the previous night. They were the owners of our hotel, and one of the gentlemen who I didn't recognise then proceeded to come over. I thought he was going to ask me my thoughts on today's stage, how I felt that Fabio Aru was faring in the Giro so far. But no, he said, we think a crime has been committed, and then you two are witnesses, and you're going to have to give us a statement.
I was very glad that he said witnesses and not suspects. But it was a very tense morning, and I came down to breakfast a little bit before you, Daniel, and... couldn't work out what was going on because basically they were saying we can't serve you breakfast at the moment, there's a problem. These gentlemen were in the reception and in the dining room area, and I wondered whether they were threatening the owners in some way. Obviously they were, but they were doing it in the spirit of law enforcement or crime investigation rather than sort of demanding money with menaces, which was my first instinct.
Mobile phones were allegedly thrown out of windows this morning when the police arrived.
It's the biggest police raid at the Giro d'Italia since 2001, when riders and suitcases and syringes were hurled out
team
of windows
buses,
or
everything was flying out of windows.
Yeah, amazing stuff. But it was quite unsettling. But
yeah, not least because we were the only guests in the hotel.
I know. Well, last night we had trouble recording because our equipment was buzzing. There was a real horrible buzz on our equipment. We had to kind of go old school and use just one handheld recorder.
Very reminiscent of Italian cycling about 15 years ago.
We were
being tapped.
Were we being bugged? I mean, was the room bugged? Was there electronic equipment in our hotel that was interfering with our recording equipment? I don't know now. I mean, who knows? I'm kind of half expecting to Google my name in about 6 months' time and find I've been cited in some kind of court case in Perugia.
Do you not Google your name every 6 days?
No, I certainly don't. Anyway, let's talk about cycling. The Giro d'Italia Stage 11, it went from Assisi to Osimo. It was a short one, 156 kilometres. And it was, I think the peloton, it was rapid, wasn't it? It was run off, but in 3 hours 25. They finished very early this afternoon. and it was shaped by a break which included some very strong riders, notably Alessandro Di Marchi of BMC and Luis Leon Sanchez of Astana. It also had Masnada, who was keeping up Androni and Gianni Savio's 100% record of getting in the breaks. Are they going to do that? They're going to do it every day, aren't they, of the whole Giro? That would be quite something. The other two riders in there were Maestri and Turin, and they got a decent break, a decent gap over the peloton. When it got towards the pointy end, Di Marchi and Sanchez dropped Masnada, who was the last rider to stay with them, around 12 kilometres to go. I thought Di Marchi and Sanchez had a decent chance of staying away, but the finish was actually very tricky. 4.8 kilometres to go, they hit a cobbled hill really quite suddenly, and that was when they were both caught, and Zdenek Stibar of Quickstep launched an attack. Tim Wellens of Lotto Fixall went with him. They were looking very good up on the climb and extremely good on the very fast descent. But then on the final climb up to the finish, Wellens dropped Stibar. And then with about 1,300 metres to go, he was passed, Tim Wellens, by Simon Yates, who was looking fast and strong. He absolutely blasted past Wellens and forced Tom Dumoulin to react. Yates held on to win the stage in really, really impressive fashion. And yet, Dumoulin, although he didn't close the gap, also looked very good. So Simon Yates has won a second stage of this Giro. Both of them have been won in the pink jersey. He's extended his lead over Dumoulin to 47 seconds. Third on the stage behind Yates and Dumoulin was Davide Formolo. The notable losers today, Chris Froome, down in 23rd position, lost 40 seconds. And Michael Woods of EF Education, fourth, down in 40th place, lost a minute and five. But today, Simon Yates, looking for everything in the world, like a rider who knows what he's going to do every time he has the opportunity.
Sorry, I was momentarily distracted there by Stefano Garzelli wearing a very fetching man scarf. The 2000 Giro champion, now works for Rai Italian TV. Simon Yates, yeah, well, we knew this was, well, this is a part of the world that the Tirreno Adriatico visits every year, pretty much. The Marche is really the home, the beating heart of the Tirreno Adriatico. Simon Yates' brother won a very similar stage of the Tirreno in March this year. We thought it would suit Simon Yates. But it also occurred to me today that if you take out Israel, and if you wanted to be pessimistic about Simon Yates' chance of winning this race overall, you might say that all Simon Yates has done so far in this race has been win a Tirreno Adriatico, effectively. We've come from the Tour of Italy, we've come from Sicily, and we're over on the Adriatic now. As I say, this was a very kind of Tirreno Adriatico style finish. Tirreno Adriatico is often won by the fastest climber, the guy who, you know, is able to thrive on finishes like the one today. However, I don't really think that's an accurate picture of what's going on in the race.
Definitely not.
Simon Yates is the, by some distance, the best climber in the race at the moment.
One of the daftest things you've ever said,
well,
Daniel. I can't think of many daft things you've said. But
the third week, someone said to me this morning, who was it, Lionel? Who was it? Someone said to me this morning that the Giro only really starts on Saturday. You'll be back home, but this time next week, Osimo might start to feel as though it was an awfully long time ago. The general classification might have changed radically. However, if you were to look at the general classification tonight and the sort of the way that the balance of power is shifting, I would suggest there are only really three riders very much still in the shake-up, and that would be Yates, Dumoulin and Pino, and they're in fact 1-2-3 on general classification. In fact, in fourth place now you've got Richard Carapaz.
He's in fifth after Domenico Pozzovivo. I would say it's certainly those five, isn't it? Because the gaps really have opened up in the second half of the top ten overall. I tell you what you're saying there, because you're right. We haven't yet reached a real big beast. There's so much climbing still to come. And we remember 2 years ago, of course, the way Vincenzo Nibali turned the tables on Esteban Chavez in the final week by just being aggressive on the hardest stages. and taking time back in well, there's opportunity to take back more time potentially on those stages, isn't there, than there is here where it isn't just Yates is just nibbling away seconds here and seconds there. But to be fair, that has been exactly their strategy. They've made no secret of what they're going to do to try and win this race, because of course the time trial on Tuesday, when the race resumes after Monday's rest day, if everything's still close between Yates and Dumoulin after Montes Oncalan and Zapata at the weekend, Yates could find himself well behind Dumoulin unless he can get himself further than the 47 seconds ahead. But I have to say, the two of them are looking so good at the moment, and I wonder, you know, is Pinot looking at this, having looked pretty good but quiet, is he biding his time maybe? Who knows? But these two look head and shoulders the best the rest.
And about Thibaut Pinot later, aren't we? But shall we hear from Tom Dumoulin? And before that, let's hear from his coach, Hendrik Werner, the German coach who jetted in a couple of days ago. And I spoke to him this morning in, where were we? We're in Assisi, weren't we? And after that, Tom Dumoulin after the finish.
He knows where he is. He has his confidence. I think he got good confidence also from the time trial, especially because it was also a short one. And last time, for sure, training was also based on getting these longer endurance, and so I think it was a good approval. So I see him in a good mindset, and also, I mean, he knows what he has to do, and his control is just to do his best possible, and everything else is not in his control, how the contender is doing. So he doesn't pay too much attention to that, I guess, or at least he doesn't. Put any negativity about it, because that's just not up to him. He's concentrating on his performance, and to my mind, he's doing it really good.
Simon Yates attacked on the last steep kicker before the finish, and I tried to follow, but he was so strong, and I had a gap on the top. I tried to close it, but I was not able to, so he was a little bit stronger, but I'm happy with my performance. The coming weekend is going to be super, super hard. So let's first think about that. And I think it will be very difficult to defend my position, but I will try to give my best, and then we will see. I hope to lose as little time as possible. I keep my hopes alive, but it's going to be very difficult.
Well, I know. There was Hendrik Werner sounding very confident about Tom Dumoulin, and Tom Dumoulin sounding pretty confident about himself, although he's obviously got some concerns about these two stages at the weekend. The Zonkerland stage is a difficult one to call. Often in the past, that climb hasn't created the time gaps we've expected, and it hasn't necessarily smiled on the small kind of featherweight climbers like Simon Yates, not all the time. But anyway, looking at the general classification now, Dumoulin is 47 seconds down on Simon Yates. I would suggest that he's still the leader in the clubhouse. He was, well, very much so. What is the kind of ballpark figure that we're thinking he's going to take in the time trial? Yates threw the figure of 2 minutes out there the other day in his press conference, but then he admitted that was literally a figure that he plucked from midair, and he had no idea how much time he was going to lose in that 34 and a half.
I mean, could it be as much as 4 or 5 seconds a kilometre? It's so hard to know, isn't it? Because this is the thing, isn't it? We think back to how Dumoulin crushed everybody except Geraint Thomas, really, in the Montefalco time trial last year. If he pulls out a performance like that again, well, Simon Yates could have a real struggle on his hands. Having said that, last year the time trial came after the rest day, but after Blockhouse. So in this week of the race. This year, the time trial comes after 2 weeks of racing and after Montes Oncalan and Zapata, two very hard back-to-back stages. So the way riders react will be completely different, or at least it will be a factor. So it's so hard to know until they're on the road. I know this is a bit of a cop-out. I think we can safely say Simon Yates will lose time to Tom Dumoulin, but it will be not just about their relative time trialing ability. If they were racing fresh over that distance and on that course, you would expect Dumoulin to pull out a world time trial championship winning effort and really hand Simon Yates a heavy beating. But you just never know. And we're talking here as if it's a done deal that these two will be 1 and 2 on GC after those two stages at the weekend. There's still a lot to go before then, so we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. But it is looking at the moment. They have done a very good job of eliminating almost everybody else bar a couple of other riders from the picture at the moment.
On Yates, Lionel, the Sanguinaccio Volante, as you have taken to calling him, I guiltily used up one of my Matt White credits tonight. Do you want to explain to the listeners what Matt White credits
are? We thought we'd have a ration on how many times Matt White appears in the podcast. He's such good value and he's always got something interesting to say, but if we're not careful, he'd be in every episode, wouldn't he? Maybe that wouldn't be a problem, I don't know, but
he's very relevant at the moment.
He's the sports director of the team that's leading the race, sports director of the rider who won the stage, so let's hear what his verdict was after today's stage.
What a difference a day makes.
Certainly does. That's cycling. That's life, isn't it? Yeah, you get your ups and downs. This is always a stage we knew really suited Yatesy. Like I said, Adam won a stage on very, very similar terrain, passing the same towns in March. And we really identified this one as the one that we could go after. Obviously, we've got the leader jersey in the Giro, so we're not here to waste a lot of energy. If it was going to be a sprint, it was a sprint. We didn't take any control today because we've got to save our guys for the rest of the race, but it was a very impressive ride. To go from where he did at 1.6 kilometres from the finish and to hold off the World Time Trial champion all the way to the line, it's another very, very impressive ride.
Surprised how much time he took.
Oh, well, I think he only took 3 seconds, didn't he?
But big gaps behind.
Big gaps, but, you know, everyone's riding their own pace in that last 1.5K. We knew that Froome would be a little bit vulnerable on a course like that, and any of those other GC guys, if you didn't have good position coming into 3-4 kilometres to go, it was really hard to move up. And we targeted it, and the boys did a very good job in delivering Gatesy into perfect position.
And if there is a note of caution today, is it that Tom Dumoulin looked really good on a climb that wouldn't necessarily suit him?
Look, Tom's the man to beat. There's no surprises, and he's an incredible athlete, and his biggest asset is that he doesn't panic, very cool under pressure, and that's why he won the Giro last year.
And Esteban today, was he he obviously rode better, looked better, but not 100% yet.
No, he's not 100%, but we had him in a different role today. Obviously he didn't need to be involved in the last 2 kilometres, and so he was looking after Simon up until I think the 4 kilometre climb where the crash was. So we're going to need Esteban on the weekend and obviously next week. So on a short, punchy stage like this, we use him in a different way.
Well, I don't think anyone could fail to be impressed with Simon Yates today. The way he went on the climb was, it's what he does, isn't it? But it was also the way he held that speed and held that gap on the flat section, which you would have thought would favour Dumoulin or give Dumoulin a chance to reel him in a little bit. It was impressive. And, one man who saw at first hand just how impressive was Tim Wellens, a Belgian rider with Lotto Fixall, won a stage of course back in Sicily and was looking to win another one today, picked his moment to attack when Stibar went but was passed by a bullet in pink. Tim, did you have a plan to attack in that particular position, or was it that you saw Stibar go, or what happened?
I didn't really have a plan, but I was there in front together with Stibar. And it was a really good tempo, and we put a really nice hole. I mean, we had a quiet distance, so I thought it was okay for the victory, but then they came back so quickly, and Yates was impressive with the speed he was going.
What did you think of Yates when he came past? Because we know he's going to try and win stages to get seconds. What's your impression of him at the moment?
He was going so fast that I didn't even try to follow. So I was doing quite good speed. I was doing 600 watts. I know I can do 620 watts for 2 minutes. So I was doing my tempo. Then he came past so quickly that it was a big difference.
It's a good finish for you, but maybe just a little bit too long?
Actually, the finish was perfect for me. I also liked to go to the last kilometer. It was twisty-turny. You had to have a good position. And I was really well positioned, especially with the help of my teammates. And I think the final today was perfect for me.
I think that puts it in context, doesn't it? When a rider of Tim Wellens' class says that he didn't even think about trying to match Yates because he knew that he wouldn't be able to. But they're the riders who've all done well today. Who were the riders who will look back on this stage as another one that has cost them some time overall. Well, obviously, Chris Froome, who was talking such a good game in his interview with you on the rest day, Daniel, but has conceded another 40 seconds. Do we know exactly what happened to him on the run-in?
Well, there's a crash in the finale, wasn't there? Just as Stima was attacking and Wellens was attacking, and things weren't. The weather's, I was about to say things were really kicking off, but the weather's starting to kick off, isn't it? There was a crash. Sergio Henao was involved in the crash. Froome was caught behind it. Were they mitigating circumstances? Well, some will suggest that they should, that Froome should have been further forward in the peloton at that point anyway, particularly knowing that the finale wasn't particularly going to suit him, particularly in his present form. And his team have not been as efficient and effective as they have been on other occasions during this Giro at placing him before climbs like the one that finished today's stage. But he didn't look great, did he, on the final climb, has lost another load of time, and it's starting to look a pretty hefty tariff on GC now. Lionel, you're going to help me?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm getting absolutely soaked here at the moment. He's down to 12th place. Chris Froome down to 12th, 3 minutes 20 behind.
3 minutes 20. So it strikes me that really changes the game for Sky. It changes the game for Chris Froome. Had he thought before today that he could, you know, ride as though he was still very much in the race?
Daniel, let's go to Nico Portal, the sports director of Team Sky, because we're getting soaked here as the rain hammers down. We need to get into the shelter. All our equipment's getting wet. So this is Nico Portal.
It was a crash, 5K to go when we hit the cobblestone. I think Sergio had a crash. I don't know if it's his fault or not. And then I think we didn't see the pictures, and I still didn't talk to any riders, so I don't know if that caused the split, but clearly we can see after 200-300 metres it was 20 guys in the front and a big split. So, I don't know, then a chase and we lost, he lost 40 seconds plus 10 seconds of bonus. So, yeah, it's not the best.
Does the strategy have to change now? Does a different Giro start now for you guys?
It's something we need to discuss all of together, but I don't think there's a kind of strategy, you know. It's just, if now it should be like 3 minutes 30 in GC. I think something for sure will never stop, and they will keep fighting until the end, that's for sure. But we started already like a few days ago already to try to win out, to go for some stage victories with some of the guys, and the same time protecting Froome. So I think it's Froome needs he's a hard racer, and he will never give up. So you know, we never know. I mean, he's nothing is lost. You know, as I said before. Stage 18, I think, if I'm right, 2 years ago, someone called Nibali, 5 minutes down, 4:30. So nothing, there's something like someone did it. So at least, you know, we need to believe in this. And let's have a cross finger. And like we said in French, there is never two without three. So we've been at three crash, you know, Froome two and Sergio one. So hopefully now it's done.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. If you'd like to get your hands on a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt or jersey, go to rafa.cc. You can find our range on there, or thecyclingpodcast.com/shop. We'll be asking for nominations tomorrow for the second week Pedaleur de Charme competition. Last week's winner was, oh goodness me, Jack Haig, of course, of Mitchelton Scott. I presented him with his t-shirt a couple of days ago. It's a vote open to all listeners to nominate riders that you think deserve the Pedaleur de Charme honour. If you want to win a prize of your own, you can win some Rafa or Science in Sport swag by retweeting tonight's episode and adding a short comment stating why you listen to the cycling podcast. Please use the hashtag Giro101.
Lionel.
Yes.
What are we going to eat tonight?
Well, I don't know. Are we eating at our countryside hideaway?
Retreat, we are.
Last night, I was desperate for some pizza al tartufonero, which, as I think we explained a few nights ago, fat spaghetti, black truffle. Our hotel owners recommended a restaurant that they said were going to serve pizza al tartufo. We found this wonderful restaurant, but they were only serving penne alla norcina, which is penne, small penne from Norcia, the town of Norcia, which does have black truffle, but it wasn't the pizza al tartufonero that I was hoping for and expecting. However, our hotel owners had more on their mind probably last night.
Yeah, they did. I'm now worried that we were... Was that restaurant a front for something as well?
It was very good food, though, wasn't it?
You had a fantastic
fillet of beef, also with black truffle.
Yeah, it's delicious. It was actually a little bit too much to handle. It was an absolute beast. It was a Paris-Roubaix-style pavé of fillet of beef.
And
excellent.
We were in my favourite wine region of Italy. Love the red wines of Umbria. We had a very fine Montefalco Rosso from Adanti, one of the best properties in or around Montefalco, and it was very good, wasn't it?
It was very nice, yes. Now, Daniel, on our way to the finish here today, we made a bit of a detour, didn't we?
We did. Today's stage, one of the main reasons that Mauro Vegni, the Giro director, designed today's stage the way he did, was that he wanted to pay the Giro's respects to Michele Scarponi, who died tragically in a collision with a car or a van in April last year, just before the Giro d'Italia. Michele Scarponi, from Filotrano, very much an ambassador for the Marche region in general. And we headed for the centre of Filotrano and the bar, which Michele Scarponi used to visit pretty much every day after training rides.
My name is Lorena Lardini and I'm from Filotrano.
Comunque, oggi le emozioni sono forti e miste, tagliate tra la gioia e la tristezza, no?
Michele was a great man, a great cyclist, but a really great man. He was genuine, kind, the same as he had always been. It was just Michele. How could you not love him?
Veniva spesso in questo bar, credo.
Sì, sì, spesso veniva in questo bar.
Yeah, he used to come here a lot. Earlier today, his mom was here.
Prima c'era la mamma.
E il vuoto che ha lasciato si sente tutti i giorni, immagino, qua.
No, dai, non... It's a party, but it's not a party. Michele was the same age as my son. You see what I mean?
Well, Daniel, I didn't understand what was being said there, but I could pick up on the emotion. People with tears in their eyes talking about Michele, and it's quite strange because we came into the centre of town here. The publicity caravan was here. The Giro coming to town is a day of celebration, but of course it's tinged with sadness here because it's only a little over a year ago that Michele Scarponi died, and it just struck me, one of his teammates, Luis Leon Sanchez, is in the break. I'd like to know if that's a way of the team. I'm sure they would have wanted to put somebody in the break today on the stage that comes to his hometown, and it's a strange sort of contrast of emotions here, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're in Bar Wally, where apparently Michele Scarponi used to come every day at the end of his training rides, and his wife Anna worked in the pharmacy just opposite. And as the lady we spoke to there said, the people here feel his absence and feel the sense of void after his death every day, simply because he was pretty ubiquitous in this place. People would see him every day. As I say, he would come ride through town on his way out on training rides and on his way back, and he was really the prodigal son.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed as we've got closer to the town, everywhere is decorated with pink balloons, but in the villages around an approaching town and here as well, it's pink, light blue and yellow, Astana colours as well. And you've seen people walking around in Astana t-shirts with Scarponi's name on the back. So I think it's a fitting tribute for the Giro to have, whether or not they're always intending to come here or not, clearly it's a day to pay tribute to him.
And
and a beautiful sort of typical Marchigiano hilltop town, a gorgeous town that's really been devastated by this event last year, not only because it claimed the life of Michele Scarponi, but also that there was another tragedy. The lorry driver who unfortunately killed Michele Scarponi according to what has been reported in the last few months, was so eaten up and devastated by what he had done that he was subsequently diagnosed with cancer and he couldn't summon any energy to fight the illness and he died a couple of months ago. So it's a very sad episode in the history of this town.
I think one last thing occurs to me, you know, as someone, you know, I don't speak Italian, I didn't know Michele Scarponi. My view on him as a rider would have been coloured by the fact that he served a doping suspension, and I think it's a reminder that they're human beings and they have friends and family, and although, you know, the sport of cycling has taken a lot of people off into dark and dubious directions, at the end of the day, Scarponi was out riding his bike, training, died in a terrible accident, and leaves a big hole in this town.
Cesare Benedetti, I remember speaking to you last year about your friendship with Michele Scarponi. Today we went through Michele's hometown, Filotrano. How did that feel?
Yeah, it's always special. You know, I've seen many banners about Michele, many rides on the road. It's good that the Giro honored him with this passage of the route today after the finish in Tirreno. It's always good to remind to remind the people about him, and it's always sad, huh? but I'm sure he was happy today.
So Lionel, one thing we didn't realise this afternoon when we were in Bar Wally in Filotrano was the lady we were speaking to, Lorena Lardini, is a bit of a name in the fashion industry in Italy. Lardini is quite a well-known fashion house. I only found this out when we arrived at the finish in Osimo today.
That was a chance encounter, wasn't it? Just somebody that you talked to in Bar Wally this afternoon. It was... as I said there, the whole place was pink, yellow and blue. And it made for quite a spectacle this afternoon coming into town, the last 20-30K. It was a fitting tribute to Scarponi, who, of course, you know, made the Giro his race every year that he did it, didn't he? Again, this is he raced during an era where race results were stripped and reallocated, but he was allocated a Giro victory, wasn't he? I think one year that Alberto Contador was stripped of a victory.
In 2011, he won the Giro d'Italia.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. You can win that Science in Sport swag if you go back to the start of the previous part, find out how to win some Science in Sport swag. But if you want to buy some of Science in Sport's products, you can get 25% off everything that's not already discounted in another offer. Go to scienceinsport.com. And when you check out, go to SISCP25. Now, I wanted to clear up something that I mentioned on the podcast yesterday about this phantom breakaway by Adam Hansen and I think Tim Wellens the other day on Stage 8 to Montevergine. Basically, the brake had gone up the road and Hansen and Wellens wanted to try and get across to it, so they attacked off the front of the bunch and got into no man's land. They were out of sight of the bunch, but they realised they weren't going to make it all the way up to the break. And rather than kind of admit defeat and just ghost back to the peloton and feel slightly embarrassed, they ducked off the road and hid somewhere, waited for the bunch to go past, and then jumped in and caught up with a bunch. It's a kind
didn't
an old
Buffalo
school.
Moore wants to do something quite similar in the University Games of East Stirling in 1994.
Come off it. I don't know. Not one of his many stories that I've heard. But it's a kind of old school thing, that. I mean, there's legendary stories from years back. I remember a story about the ANC Halfords riders doing a race in southern France. It may have been Midi Libre or something down in the other side of southern France, where they ducked into a side road and trying to basically pack the race, get out of the race.
Geographical doping is the next frontier. I've been saying this for years.
Yeah, well,
we've had
we think taking shortcuts.
Mechanical doping. It's going to go full circle.
Back to shortcuts again. People getting on trains.
But
these two ANC riders, were trying to basically just abandon the race quietly without anyone noticing. Unfortunately, an overzealous sort of motorcycle marshal spotted them and was like, no, you've gone the wrong way. Come back. And so they had to sheepishly get back on the course and chase up with the bunch again, and were even more tired by the time they caught up. Anyway, Hansen said that afterwards he was a little bit concerned that some riders in the bunch might not have appreciated their antics and thought that they were taking the mickey somewhat, which they weren't. But an amusing little story, which Nicholas Roach also wrote about in his blog in one of the Irish newspapers. Blog? Column in one of the Irish newspapers. So, yeah, all sorts of shenanigans going on here.
Lionel, it's stopped raining.
It has. It's a
fantastic
relief.
Fantastic and very picturesque route today, wasn't it?
Beautiful. I mean, I just said as we were walking down here how much Italy has changed in 2 days. And I'm always struck. This is the third year in a row that I've done the opening 2 weeks of the Giro. And we've made more or less the same journey each time up from, in 2016, after the start in the Netherlands, we started in Reggio, more or less, where was it now? It was Lamezia Terme was where we flew into. So it was there around that region and then sort of up through Benevento and so on. Last year was the same with the start in Sardinia and then Sicily and then up through from Reggio Calabria again. And we've done more or less the same thing this year. And it really does, it's incredibly striking how much the country has changed in only 2 days and 400 or 500 kilometres. It feels completely different to a couple of days ago.
Do you know they even have their own kind of pizza up here in Le Marche? It's called La Crescia.
And what's it like?
I know there's beer used in the dough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, it's more like a panino, so it's sort of filled.
Right.
It's kind of halfway between a pizza and a pasty.
Ah. But not a calzone.
Not a calzone, but it's not dissimilar. Talking of food, this is a very tenuous link. Whenever we've mentioned Thibaut Pinot, we've not talked enough about Thibaut Pinot. Whenever we've mentioned him, we've inevitably mentioned his brother, Julien, and his great fascination with cannoli in Sicily. This is all based on very little. We saw him one day go to buy cannoli.
This is how things work, unfortunately.
But I was assured by other people in the Groupama FDJ team that his passion for cannoli is real. Anyway, we also made rather a lot of a little, in the sense that I boasted that I was going for lunch with Thibaut Pinot a few days ago. Mm-hmm. On Monday. Didn't exactly go for lunch with him. However, I did speak to him, and I spoke to him about the Giro. He's riding high on general classification. He's one of the riders we think can still win the race. He's third.
He is.
And really, I wanted to know about his love affair, which I think is obvious to everyone now, his love affair with Italy and the Giro. But first of all, I asked him what he knew about the last French victory in the Giro d'Italia, and that came courtesy of Laurent Fignon in 1989. After that, I put it to him that, as far as I can see, the Giro looks a lot like fun to him, while the Tour de France looks like work.
Thibaut, le dernier vainqueur en français du Giro, c'est Fignon. Qu'est-ce que ça représente pour toi, Laurent Fignon?
Fignon winning the Giro means to me that, well, I wasn't even born, so it's a long time ago now. It was 1988, no? Or 87? Ah, no, 89. So that's 30 years ago. It was cycling as it was, 3 decades ago. The sport's changed a lot since then. If I could be the next French winner of the Giro, that would be a great achievement for me. Is the Giro fun and the Tour just the job? Yes and no. I've seen this week that even on stages that don't necessarily suit me, it's the race I feel best in. I really get the feeling that this race is made for me. I have a lot of fun riding here. We've only just finished the first week, done 9 stages, and 3 of them have been uphill finishes, and 2 more for puncheurs. At the Tour, we wouldn't have even had a summit finish yet. That just shows life's never boring on the Giro.
On s'ennuie pas de trop, quoi. Donc, sur le tour, on n'a encore pas eu une arrivée au sommet à cette stade de la compétition, donc ça change aussi ça.
Daniel, that's a really interesting point because every morning I see Pino riding to the start or riding to the sign on. He's on his own. He's just no one's paying attention to him. The fans aren't particularly interested in him. The journalists aren't bothered. Whereas at the Tour de France, he's mobbed everywhere because he's one of the big French hopes, and I can completely understand that. He's riding here almost anonymously.
Yeah, and I think he. He's very, very reluctant to commit to refocusing on the Tour de France in future. His contract's up for renewal. His team manager, Marc Madio, wants him to concentrate on the Tour de France next year. But ultimately, I think Pino can see himself one day winning the Giro, and he struggles to see himself winning the Tour. We talked a bit more about the Giro, what he loves about it. You're going to hear that in this clip now. I also asked him, Lionel, in these last few years of racing in Italy and racing the Giro, is there any particular location, any particular place he's been to where he's sort of said to himself, one day I'd like to come back here and buy a nice little house and maybe a porch and with a nice view and, I don't know, a cat. He likes his animals, doesn't he? And his baby goats.
C'est tout simplement parce que on peut avoir une étape de montagne au bout de 3 jours. On arrive...
Here we have a mountain stage after 3 days. They're just really interesting courses. At Gran Sasso, the finish was in an incredible setting. I don't know if you saw it. Every day we're discovering a different landscape, and it's a country I'm getting to know through cycling, and where I feel really good. I never get bored at the Giro.
Où tu t'es dit à la fin de la carrière, j'aimerais bien avoir une petite maison là ou retourner avec la copine ou.
Ouais, bah j'aime beaucoup la Sicile.
Is there somewhere I'd like to buy a house or visit with my girlfriend when I end my career? Well, I like Sicily a lot. Beyond that, I think the Dolomites are the most beautiful place. When the weather's good, I think it's maybe the best place for cycling I've ever been to.
Well, you say Daniel Pino is one of the men who could still win this race. I'm looking at the GC now. Yates, Dumoulin, Pino. Pino's 104 down, and then it's Pozzovivo at 118, and then Richard Calapaz of Movistar, the best young rider at 156. They're the only riders within 2 minutes of the pink jersey, and these last couple of days have done a fair bit of damage, really. And, well, it's interesting looking at the top ten, seeing that Miguel Angel Lopez, who we thought was going to be tearing things up for Astana, yet to really get going. Fabio Aru doesn't look like the man who won the Vuelta a few years ago. Chris Froome, you asked last night whether I thought he was out of it yet. 320 down. It's starting to look like he's out of it. I mean, that's a lot to make up. But the riders that have interested me, really, George Bennett is riding well.
He didn't have a great day today, but then it wasn't his kind of finish, really. I mean, he's not the most explosive rider. He was 12th over the line, and he lost 23 seconds he lost.
Rowan Dennis is hanging on in that top 10, as he stated he would do once he lost the pink jersey. He was going to carry on riding as if he still had the pink jersey, so he's going to follow the best wheels that he possibly can. Astana's best-looking rider at the moment is Pello Bilbao López de Armentia.
Best looking, as in most handsome, highest cheekbones,
possibly. But the man in ninth place, the Austrian rider riding for Bora, Patrick Conrad, Well, he is riding Ala Zubeldia, and in our press conference episode, we talked about the phenomenon of riding Ala Zubeldia, but we neglected to mention who Zubeldia was. That's Heimar Zubeldia, of course, who I think finished in between 6th and 10th place in about 30 Grand Tours in his career. Very good Basque rider, rode for Euskaltel for a lot of years, finished his career with Trek, was, I think, 40 years old by the time he retired. But riding Ala Zubeldia basically means ghosting your way into the top 10 without really anyone noticing you. And I have to say, I couldn't tell you when I've seen Patrick Conrad on the TV screen or prominent at the front, but he's always in the
right
group. We
will investigate over the next few days.
Indeed.
We already have investigated Lionel, what is going wrong with Fabio Aru's Giro. Unfortunately, we've not got time for that. The episode is two packs. We'll revisit that issue, I think, tomorrow. But Aru today lost yet more time. He lost 21 seconds, so a slight improvement today.
Yeah. Well, we really ought to wrap it up, Daniel. We need to go to our hotel, and hopefully it won't be a hotel that's been interesting the authorities in the last 48 hours or so. We'll have a more peaceful morning tomorrow morning. Before we go, just a few things to let you know about. If you are a friend of the podcast for 2018, you can listen to our Kilometre Zero series, the latest episode of which was Daniel's interview chat philosophical discussion with Swain Tuft of the Mitchelton Scott team. That came out this morning. There's an episode every Monday, Wednesday and Friday of the Giro. Sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com/friends. It's £15 for this year, and there's a whole host of feature-length episodes and other bonuses, the latest of which is the Espoir's Diary. This is a sort of spin-off from one of Richard Moore's special episodes where he went to Belgium and met Tim Harris and Jocelyn Ryan, who have been basically giving young riders a foot up and an education in bike racing and a leg up on their journey to book towards becoming professionals. And Richard went and met some of the latest intake, the class of 2018, if you like, and they were so engaging that we decided to give them their own mini series. So you can hear how they're getting on, the Espoir's Diaries, that is. The Friends of the Podcast program has been going for quite a few years now. A couple of years ago, I went up to Lancashire to meet Simon and Adam Yates and speak to them both together. And that episode is available on the 2016 feed. You can get all of the feeds together, and there's a bit of a discount if you go to the website. But here is a little clip from that episode.
But yeah, I enjoy my time on the Academy. I think it's a good laugh, you know. I was always nipping home and seeing the parents and stuff, and get my teacup for me, because I still didn't know how to cook at that point. So,
any good now?
Not really.
Oh, we try, though. We're getting better. Yeah. We're getting better.
You got a speciality?
Oh. Probably spaghetti bolognese. It's not really a speciality, or not difficult to make, but
that's all right. It's all right. Fuel for the engine, isn't it? I like a good spag bol. Tabasco sauce in it always gives it a little bit of a kick. If that just, try that.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go, improving every day.
Yeah. Exactly, learn something every day, yeah. And people are tuning in for the cookery tips, obviously.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Simon, you went through the Academy. Adam, you went through the Reina Fund and went and raced for a French club. And you've both reached the same sort of place, proving that really the path can work as long as the right rider is on that right path. Yeah. A long-winded way to say, you obviously feel the way it's all worked out, that you had the right steps of development. You weren't shoehorned into something that didn't suit you.
I think if you've got the motivation and, you know what you want to do, and you just got to get out there and do it. I mean, if you're doing it by half and, you know, you're like, oh, maybe I'll do this, maybe that, you're not making a decision, then it's not going to happen. Yeah. Like, for me, as soon as I knew I was in the Academy, I went straight out to France, and first time living on my own properly. And I did that with the help of Dave Rainerfund and with Josh Hunt, another local, lives around here. We were training with him quite a lot. I lived with him and stayed in the French team for 2 years.
He has a membership card here, doesn't he?
Yeah, he comes here all the time with us. And like I said, I wouldn't change how I did it. And it just shows, like you said, that you can do different pathways together. And it's the same now. I think there's even more opportunities for all the young guys that are coming through. Like, I went to a Dave Rainer dinner, you know, a couple of nights ago, and all these young guys there, they're all, you know, super motivated, and, you know, they've seen me do it now, and all the people before me, and it's just like, you know, they know that they can do it, and you know, it's just added motivation to get there.
Daniel, I'm not even going to give you an opportunity.
45 minutes ago, you said we need to wrap this up.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just... the listeners who have got this far will presumably be craving more material from us, so I'm just giving them what they want. But I'm not going to give you an opportunity to berate me about the idea of putting Tabasco sauce in a bolognese sauce. So, yeah, we'll leave that there. Just a quick mention on the escalating nickname for Simon Yates, Sanguinaccio Volante, which translates as the flying black pudding, because he's from Berry, of course, home of black pudding. The Het Nieuwsblad, the Belgian newspaper, have adopted it today. They've bloedwurst, blood sausage, was one of their headlines today. We've had a couple of comments, you know, people saying, "Oh, we're being disrespectful." Absolutely not. We're absolutely not being disrespectful. This is something that cycling, I think, has lost in the sort of the ultra professional era, the ultra modern era. Let's get back to the days where every rider has a nickname. I mean, Michele Scarponi had a nickname, no?
L'Aquila di Feltrano.
Which
Enough.
Means?
Basta.
Which means? What did it mean?
Buonasera. It means the Eagle of Filotrano.
Exactly. Anyway, on that note, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thanks, it's been an absolute joy.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.